Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Tables Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
You can see him often going from his plane to his helicopter, very busy. And interestingly, he is a certified skydiver and pilot, but is also very afraid of heights. Go figure. And we also tried to catch him sneaking out before this show, so luckily he stuck around, and welcome, Keller.
How's it going, guys? I'm Keller. And with tonight's theme, I wanted to tell some stories about growing up in Kodiak and my brother Jay, who was always by my side through most of these stories, and sneaking out. However, of all the times we snuck out in Kodiak and everything we did, this story actually takes place in Playa del Carmen, Mexico, somewhere around 2000 to 2002, although I'm not entirely sure. So, basically, Jay and I were actually, I believe, freshmen in college when this happened. And we went there with my parents and my sisters. And we ended up in Playa del Carmen after going one or two other places. And we'd been there about a week. And every night my parents would kind of go to bed. And we had two little spots in this, about 3 blocks back. We were a long ways from the beach. We were about 3 blocks back, and we'd all sneak out at night and kind of head down to Senior Frogs or whichever place we needed to go. And we kind of met friends over the week that we were there, and so every night we'd go out and kind of meet up with our friends that we had met. And we met a family from Nebraska. It was a couple girls and a couple guys. And I don't even know where to start with this. So we went down to, we'd go out, and this one I went out to Senior Frogs, and all kind of had a few beers. And then as we were going home, we'd go to this place called the Blue Parrot. The Blue Parrot was just at the bottom of the 3 blocks down from where we were staying. And we'd always kind of show up there. This is before a cell phone, so we'd always kind of go out, mingle around, go to different bars, but we'd always meet back up at the Blue Parrot, and that's where we all met and then went home from there. So this particular night, I showed back up, and I was the first one there. And we're hanging out with a couple girls, and all of a sudden, there was blood all over our table. And someone had actually gotten stabbed at the table next to us. It was kind of crazy. So we just took off out of there like anybody would do. We weren't sure what was going on, but it was outside on a beach bar. So we took off out down to the beach. And I was with the two girls from Nebraska. And I was actually with my sister Gail, and she ended up going straight back to the house. When we all left, it happened so fast that she went to the house and we went down to the beach. So the girls were kind of freaking out, washing blood off in the beach and taking their shirts off and kind of like, it was pretty bad. And so me being the gentleman I was, I decided to walk them the mile down to their all-inclusive resort to drop them off. So we kind of walked down the beach and got to their place, and we sat there talking for a little bit, and one girl decided she needed to go tell her dad what happened. So her dad finally came over to their room and decided that I needed to leave. So, which was fine. So, we had been in Mexico at this point for probably 3 weeks. My parents like taking long vacations, like a month and a half long vacations. That's a long time to be down there partying, which is what we were doing. So, I started walking back towards the Blue Parrot, but it was really sandy and soft on the beach. And so I decided, I'm just gonna go up a couple blocks and then kind of cut down, because it was a half moon beach, you know, it was kind of like shaped like this. So I was like, I have to go up 2 or 3 blocks and just walk down. So I went up 2 or 3 blocks and was walking down the road. And this blue Nissan Frontier pulled up. And a couple guys got out, and you could tell right away, like, you're full on. I'm like, man, something's not right. This is weird. And these guys started talking to me about buying drugs. I'm like, oh, no, man, I don't smoke weed. I'm fine, you know, just kept walking. Well, next thing I knew, like, I was forcibly shoved into this Nissan Frontier, and it just started driving off. And I was, like, down kind of in the left corner of this thing, like, shoved, like, physically in this thing. The guy wouldn't let me up, and they were pretty strong. And I was, like, full panic mode. I didn't really know what to do, so I didn't do anything. So I just kind of sat there, relaxed a little bit. And I could tell they were driving and turning, but I couldn't tell where we were going. And finally, the guy, like, got tired of sitting on me. So he jumped up, and I just sat there. And then there was someone in the front seat, and he's like, hey, man, check out my sister. You like my sister? And she turned over, and she was a 5 out of 10. However, she had definitely been born a man, there's no question. And so she, like, kind of leaned back and started talking to me, and it distracted the guy just long enough that I was able to reach over and flip the lock on the door. And I just opened the door and jumped out. Now, we were going that fast. We're probably going about 20 miles an hour. But let me tell you what, they had those little brick streets, you know, bricks that go together. And I hit that street, and I don't know which way I landed, but I got up and started running. And I ran left and right and left and right. I don't even think they ever chased me. I don't think anybody chased me. I was going. I was winning the race, whatever was happening. And as I'm running down the street, I figured out I was lost, so I stopped for a second. There's some wind blowing, and it had been blowing on shore when we were down at the Blue Parrot, so I finally made my way back down to the beach, and I didn't recognize anything. So I knew I had gone past the Blue Parrot, so I turned around and went the other way. And I finally got to the Blue Parrot, started walking up, and this federal stopped me on the street with a gun. And he's like, hey, wait here. So I'm like, I didn't know what was going on. It's about 5 in the morning at this point. And he's like, no, you need to wait here. And he was basically told me my brother was looking for me. Luckily, Jay showed up about 3 minutes later, but I hadn't showed up. So Jay was running around looking for me, trying to find me. And he had told the guy at one point, like, hey, if you see this guy, stop him, make him stay. And do this. So I'm standing there, literally bloody knees, bloody elbows. I got blood on my forehead, my nose. And yeah, so eventually Jay shows up, and we go home and crawl back to our little place. And my parents wake up the next morning, like, oh, what happened to you? There I was, but anyways, I didn't learn any lessons. So.
She's been in Kodiak on and off since she was 3 years old in 1967. She was a hairdresser and now has an MA in counseling and is a counselor at the middle school. She has 3 sons, 16 grandkids. She loves hiking, dancing, music, crocheting, crafting, and wine. A crazy factoid, she's part of a large fishing family that's been here since the 1950s. Please welcome Chris.
I'm not used to microphones. This was a drunken pinky swear with my friend Jackie Landry, who I'm sure you'll see before the end of the season. When I first heard about sneaking out, of course the thoughts flowed back. I didn't have a lot of rules and regs as a kid. I didn't really have a curfew. My dad was kind of like, let her raise naturally. You get caught with a knife, you'll be careful next time. I have memories and thoughts about, we left here, Kodiak, in the seventh grade. So in eighth grade, I moved to a tiny little farm town in eastern Oregon. And one horse town. And all we really could do on a Saturday night was run from the cops. So so we'd go to the park, and they kind of had grassy knolls. And so I remember, you know, jumping over the grassy knolls so that their little spotlight wouldn't, you know, see us. And I remember drinking, like, Miller beer in a glass, you know, Bill Miller Light, of course, in the dugouts, and carving my name in a tree with my little boyfriend. But the story I want to tell tonight about sneaking out is kind of different. When I first moved to Oregon, I just had turned 13. I'm at the park with a new friend, and I see this young couple across the park. And I'm kind of, you know, she's telling me about them. Oh, they had a baby, and they're 14 and 15. They had a child together. And just kind of interesting. They're very young, and so they're kind of the talk of the town. And so I just kind of remembered that. So school starts eighth grade, and having different little boyfriends and getting to know people. And late in the year, I'm kind of seeing the same boy around. He's kind of cute, you know, and I think he's really, you know, something special. So over the summer and into the fall, school starts, and I'm in high school with him now. He's a junior football player, and I'm a freshman. I got to be a cheerleader that year. I have a really big mouth, so it worked out really well. I just pursued him like crazy. I was in wood shop, and I cut out this little heart-shaped stool, and I took it over to his house, and he hardly even knew me. And I walked to his door, and I, you know, opened the door, and he's like, oh, heart-shaped stool. What boy really wants a heart-shaped stool? So I give it, you know, I give it to him. He's like, thank you. And anyway, I pursued him just terribly. That was the first time I think I probably should have snuck out of that situation. Into that, later that year, we started dating. We dated the rest of freshman year. And the freshman year, it's summertime. He's working at the corn cannery with his older sister processing corn, and I'm going to Boise from Vail. It's like an hour and a half drive to the drive-in theater, closest place we could go. I'm with girls and boys that we went to school with, a really small school. And when I get back about midnight, my parents aren't looking for me, which they should have been, but oh well. I go up to his house and I go inside. His parents were downstairs sleeping at a small house, but they had a basement. So I go in and he's sitting there. It's dark in the room, but the curtains kind of open a little bit, just enough that the street light can shine in. And I notice that he's holding a gun in his hands. And, you know, I've never really seen that before. What's going on? You know, it's like, I just, you know, I can't handle that you're out with other guys and, you know, just really intense. I'm gonna kill myself and all this. And so all of a sudden the gun goes off. It's really dark in there, but just light, you know, just enough light to see him, but I can see the flash of the gun, and he shot down towards the floor, from what I could tell. I mean, guns are loud, and I don't know why to this day his parents didn't, you know, come upstairs or hear it or anything. Nothing happened. I, at that point, was like, oh my gosh, I need to love this man better. Oh. I am not... You know, I need to not make him jealous. I need to make sure that I'm, you know, making him feel special, and he's had a hard life. And so at that point, instead of sneaking out, which is a big warning sign, obviously it should have been. But again, I'm a freshman in high school. At the end of the day, I just like, shh, whatever. So it kind of, you know, things kind of turned a corner at that point. We got married. The end of Fred, sophomore year of high school. He was a senior, so we're 16 and 18. We get married and I'm pregnant with my first son. And part of the story too is that his little boy that he had with the other gal had leukemia. So he's living on the Oregon coast getting treatments in Portland and Eugene for children. And we went over there to see him, and we had a little cabin over camper that we slept in because we had very little money. So we get over there, we sleep, we have a little for the drive, it's real windy. I'm very car sick very easily, and I'm pregnant. And he would not stop to get something to eat. My stomach is just empty. And anyway, we keep driving and he's just not stopping. And I'm like, why is he not stopping? I finally get out, I'm throwing up stomach acid. It's this awful situation. And again, why didn't I sneak out of this? I have so many, I can't believe this much time has gone by because I have so much story to tell, but I'll move it forward to just at 14 years of marriage, he finally snuck out. We were living back in Kodiak. He just built a house, good low payment because he worked on it, and he said he was leaving. And I was kind of happy about it. We had three boys, and I was like, are you gonna leave me anything? I just started working as a hairdresser, and you know, three boys, they were 9, 10, and 13 by then, so we'd have all these years together. And unfortunately, I can't tell half the stories I wanted to tell up to this point, but that's okay. Anyway, he left. I went to the bank the next Monday after he had left, and there was $50 in my account.
Jeez.
And I was just like, wow, it was kind of that final straw, but you know, he started calling, he wanted to come back, and you know, I realized he had snuck out, and he had left us and left his kids, and it just, I don't know, it was a good moment. It was a good thing that he snuck out, and I wish now that I had the courage earlier in my life to do that. But the end of this story is, after getting counseling and realizing I had a bad picker, I ended up finding a wonderful man, been together 18 years now, but I just would encourage anybody that's in a situation with someone that's not treating them well, sneak out.
Our next storyteller is Madeline Pearman.
Madeline Pearman loves coffee, and her cats, and her husband Trey, in that order. Her favorite pastime is watching sports. She just loves to see those football players shoot those home runs right in the net. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I guess she loves coffee, her cats, sports, and Trey. Please welcome Madeline.
So I'm one of those people that when a friend asks me to do a favor for them, I have a really hard time saying no. Is there anybody else in here who's like that? Can you raise your hand really high? And then facilitators, those are the people you can ask. Okay. Just got that out of the way. Eleni asked me on Wednesday night if I would share a story, and I was like, sure, I'll tell a story, but in order to tell it accurately, I needed to message the entire 8th grade class that I went to middle school with. So I sent that message just to make sure I got the details just right for you guys tonight. With that said, I am a proud St. Mary's alumni. Yeah, go Saints! Not like Kudat, wrong sports. I'm really proud of graduating from St. Mary's. I think I learned a lot of really valuable lessons when I went there. I had awesome teachers and administrators who really instilled a sense of compassion and social justice in me. Sister Angela's speech class, 7th and 8th grade, prepared me for this very moment. I don't think that if you had told any of my teachers that I would be on this stage singing praises of St. Mary's tonight, they would have believed you. Because when I went to St. Mary's, me and the graduating class of 2004, it was our quiet goal to sabotage the whole school. For me, I think it started when I was younger. You know, at St. Mary's, you're not supposed to wear nail polish, so I would wear nail polish to school every single Monday. And every single Monday, I would get sent to the office to pay a quarter to get the nail polish taken off. There are pros and cons to growing up with the same kids in your class year after year. One of the pros being, you get really creative at ways to entertain yourselves. One of the cons being for your teachers. So one year we decided in middle school to set the clocks back to see if we could get out of school early. That didn't work. Another year we had a new student, and we told our teacher that he was Willie from Idaho. His name wasn't Willie, and he wasn't from Idaho. That one didn't last very long either. And then there was a time we took things probably a little bit too far. We got a new teacher in the middle of January, and we were harassing him so much that he threatened to quit. He did. So with all of that said, it probably comes as no surprise that the fateful Wednesday rolled around where our Spanish class had been canceled. And when we told Sister Angela, she did not believe us. When we took Spanish, we went from St. Mary's and a bus picked us up and took us to the college. So when we got to the college, and sure enough, the class was canceled, we had a team meeting. And that team meeting resulted in a three-way split decision. I'm going to refer to them as the good choice, the bad choice, and the really terrible choice. So the bad choice was the group of kids who stayed at the college, kind of took the hour off, waited for their parents to come pick them up. They got in minimal trouble. The good choice was the group who politely walked back to the school and told on everyone else. And then there was a really terrible choice, which was the group of people who decided to walk past the school to one of the girls' houses. I was told via Facebook message, it was all fun and games until the middle school boys showed up. At that point, she decided decided, my parents are going to kill me if they walk in the door and you guys are here. And so they hightailed it back to the school. And upon arrival at the school, coming from the opposite direction of the college, they were face to face with the principal, Sister Diane. One of the girls said, "I just have a very vivid memory of Sister Diane charging toward me. It was terrible." If you don't know Sister Diane, she's really tiny and like this tall. So at that point, they were faced with the decision, right? You know, they've been caught red-handed, so they could either succumb to the consequences of their actions, or they could run. They ran. So Sister Diane chased them across the playground. They made it back to the other girl's house. And I'm not really sure, it's kind of fuzzy how things transpired after that, but I know there were some serious consequences. And you would think that that would stop the 2004 graduating 8th grade class of St. Mary's from any further shenanigans, but it did not. Back then, there was a retreat at the end of 8th grade where the class would go out to Sag Shack. The girls would stay on one side of that big, gated, locked bridge, and the boys would stay on the other. That big, gated, locked bridge was not enough to keep the middle school girls from sneaking over to the middle school boy cabin. But they didn't get caught. I mean, kind of they didn't get caught, because then when we were in high school, one of the girls went back, and the seventh grade teacher made a joke about people sneaking out during their retreat, to which she confessed everything. He did not know about it. He told her mom and the school principal, to which resulted in any and all further class retreats at the end of 8th grade being canceled for eternity. So if you graduated St. Mary's after 2004, I'm sorry on behalf of my class. So the moral of the story being, some people are really bad at being sneaky, and those people should probably avoid sneaking out. Thank you.
Originally from Wichita Falls, Texas. The Coast Guard brought him and his wife to Kodiak 2 years ago. They fell in love with Kodiak right away and just got orders to stay until 2020. Very exciting. Ryan enjoys anything that involves being outdoors or traveling. He's been in the Coast Guard for 15 years, 11 which he has been on a boat. So the next little tidbit is not going to be a surprise that while at sea, he fine-tuned his love for Chuck Norris facts. Fact. Chuck Norris actually has a Kodiak Bear rug on his living room floor. It's not dead, it's just too afraid of Chuck Norris. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Ryan.
My grandfather grew up in northern Minnesota on a lake. And for the past 7 years, my family had a vacation on the same lake, on a small resort. And at the time, I was living in Oklahoma, and I decided to ride my motorcycle up to the lake resort. And we're up there, we're fishing, having a great time, and every time I come back fishing, I look on the beach and I see these three girls about my age. And I also see no guys my age. I ran the numbers. The odds are good. So one night I come back, we're in the fish house, and my uncle and I are cleaning fish, and this older couple come up to me and they say, "Hey, we're having a s'mores night, a campfire at the cabin. Why don't you guys come over?" And I said, Which cabin you guys in? I knew which cabin you're in. I've been casing the place all week. I knew where those girls were staying. So they're like, "Oh, we're this, you know, this cabin over here." I was like, "Ah, that's cool. I'm done. See you, uncle. I'll be over the cabin." So I go to the cabin. We're having drinks and s'mores and the campfire. One girl's married, happily married. The other girl's just engaged. And the last girl is single. So I kind of chatter up all night, I meet the family and everything, we're having a great time. And it's time for everybody to turn in. So everybody goes to bed, and she kind of turns to me, she goes, "Don't go anywhere." I don't go anywhere. So I'm hanging out, talking to myself at the campfire, and she sneaks out. And she says, what do you like to do for fun around here? Normally you'd say something really cool like, yeah, baby, whatever you want to do, you know, we're in for it around here. I went with, I like to pull catfish out of tires. A little backstory on the catfish and the tires. So there's these docks and they put tires with these beams. So when the boat's pulling, they use them as fenders. And at night, the catfish come and spawn. And since I was a little kid, you get a flashlight and you reach over and you pull them out and you eat them. That's what I did for the past many years going to a resort in Minnesota. So she sneaks out and says, what do you like to do for fun? I like to pull catfish out of tires. And she says, all right. So it's like 2 a.m. and we had a few. And I'm holding the flashlight and her, holding her drink and she's getting it. You know, like she's in it. Yeah. And I kind of like, man, I really like this girl. She's on it. So we stay every night, we part ways. Well, before we part ways, I say, hey, I'm going for a motorcycle ride tomorrow. Would you like to come with me? She's, yeah, absolutely, let's do that. So the next morning, she comes to my campsite. And it's like, I got the spare helmet for you, we're ready to go. She hops in the back, and we're riding through the resort. It's a small resort. And I look down kind of the main drag, and I see her dad, and he's kind of like. And I was like, hey, I think your dad is signaling us to stop. Like, I think we should stop. And she's like, no, I think it's best if we keep going. Oh yeah, I don't know. And I, like, we're like, I'm creeping. And he's like, I'm pretty sure he wants us to stop. Like, I don't mind stopping, I'll talk to your dad, it's fine, beer, I'll make it fine, listen to this. She's like, let's go. So I went, and we're riding through, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I gotta take her home. They know where I'm camped out. Like, we're gonna have to do this. So I was pretty nervous. So I didn't realize it, but she had snuck out again to come meet with me. And it threw me off guard. But, you know, through all that sneaking out and everything, we kept in touch after that. And 2 years later, we got married. So 2 years later, we got married, and I'd like to recap. There, we still sneak out. We went camping last night. I was supposed to go to work. I didn't go. So still sneaking out, and I kind of like to recap this. I grew up in Texas. Sarah grew up in Illinois. I was living in Oklahoma. She was living in Iowa. We met in Minnesota. Got married in Kansas City. Moved to Florida, then North Carolina, and now we're in Kodiak together.
Our next storyteller, his name is Caden Jett. He was born in Jacksonville, Florida. He was brought to Kodiak by the Coast Guard in 2016. He was stationed on the U.S. Coast Guard Spar. His hobbies include Snapchat filters and staring contests with himself in the mirror. Inside out. So welcome, Caden.
Thank you. Hey, what's up? Thanks for coming out to see your talk. I know that's why you're here. So kind of like the last time I talked, I took the theme and I stretched a little just to fit a story I wanted to tell. So this is how So when I was a little kid, I was like really timid and scared and not very sociable. And anybody that knows me knows I'm not that way. I'm kind of overconfident, if anything. But when I was a kid, up until I was about 16, I was just scared. Like, if you jumped over, like, from the corner and yelled at me, I would, like, curl into a ball and cry. Like, it was bad. But this is essentially how I became, like, Baywatch. So, back home, there's this thing, it's called, yeah, right? There's this thing called the American Red Cross Volunteer Life Saving Corps, which is a mouthful, so we call it the ARC, VLSC. And in order to become a part of this elite group of essentially beach lifeguards, but we call ourselves Ocean Rescue because beach lifeguard doesn't sound as cool, it was a 12-week long program where you had to give up an entire Sunday and then Tuesday nights. And as a 16-year-old, you know, giving up a day of your weekend's like a big deal. So in 2012, I decided to go out for it because a family friend, Chris Porter, who was like 39, decided to do it. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it with you. And it starts out almost comically. It's like a bunch of teenagers and then like a bunch of dudes in their 30s who think they can do it in a room. And they're telling us about it. And they're like, it's really hard. And all of us were like, yeah, dude, it's a lifeguard job. Okay. It was really, really hard. So over these 12 weeks, you run up and down the beach, but the hardest part is you have to get drowned, and like, a lot. Like, you don't think we would take it as seriously as we do, and we took it so seriously. And it was like, you wake up on Sunday morning and you're like already terrified because it's hard. But essentially, they take you and you're practicing rescues, but you're practicing worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is somebody who is stronger than you is trying to drown you, right? So that's what they did for 10 weeks in 2012, and then I failed out. Yeah, and I was devastated. I remember calling my mom because I couldn't drive at the time, and I was just like, Mom, I guess you need to come pick me up. And she said, oh, you can walk to this restaurant I'm eating at. Thanks, Mom. But I'm stubborn. So I went out again. There's two classes every year, winter and summer. I failed out of the summer 12, so I decided to go for the winter 13. And I did, and everyone remembered me. So I got the tar beat out of me for 12 weeks, like 12 really long weeks. And I got a lot of nicknames. At the time, I was going by Clancy, and they made any word rhyme with Clancy and just called me that. So I was Fancy Clancy for some reason, even though I've never been fancy. I was Pansy Clancy, which didn't make sense, but they liked yelling it. Dancy Clancy, and they would make me dance. So that was the thing, like, they could pretty much make you do whatever you wanted on that Sunday, right? And they'd yell at you, and yeah, they would make me dance and call me Dancy Clancy. So yeah, as a 16-year-old, that's awesome and exactly what you want to do. Oh, another thing I kind of forgot. They make you make a sign, and it's like 5 inches by like a foot, and it sits on your chest. It's a thick piece of wood, and it has to fit over your head, not this way, but that way, and then slide over so it sits perfectly on your chest, and in big red letters, mine was Recruit C. Clancy, and then they made me make a second one that said Dancy Clancy, and I had to hang it off the second sign, so I had 2 signs. So, and they make, you're like in public with these signs on. And you look ridiculous because you have essentially what are just slightly older teenagers that are in better shape yelling at you while they're like making you do workouts up and down the beach. Meanwhile, like the girl you like is right over there seeing you with these 2 signs on. It's hilarious. It's like some of the best memories ever. Like, I'm just up here talking about it. Like, it was humiliating, but whatever. So anyways, towards the end, your 12th week they call Hell Week, right? Crap. So it starts, so the Tuesday night of Hell Week, they call it Black Wall, right? And essentially, they make you sit right here, and you kind of stand at like attention, and they put a searchlight in your face, and I don't know if you've ever had a searchlight like an inch away from your face, but it's really hot and really bright and you can't see anything. And they're screaming at you all this knowledge, right? You have to know, like, oh, what are the steps to CPR? What do you do this? What do you do that? And then they go, all right, everybody in the first row, stand up. What are all their names? And you're like, oh, crap, I didn't prepare for any of this. So if you fail that, you get kicked out. I didn't fail that. I was like, whoa, first step done. Awesome. Saturday night, though, is like the night. It's pool tests, all right? That, like, I just got a shiver up my spine just saying pool tests, okay? Like, it's terrifying. We're all in the parking lot of the pool. Fletcher High School was the high school pool we would all train at. And me and all my classmates were all psyching each other up. One of my best friends, Del Bruce, was there. Tad Jennings was there. Travis Blakesley. I know all these guys' names by heart. We're all just, like, we're literally slapping each other in the face. Like, we have to get hyped up because you hear so many stories about kids like, yeah, you've thrown up blood for a week. Keep in mind, we're just trying to be volunteer lifeguards on the weekends. So, so we all line up because we have to march like dopes up this, up to the pool and warm up so they can yell at us more. And as soon as we line up, they start chanting my name. And this isn't like a supportive, like, yay, he can do it kind of chant. This is a, oh my gosh. This is like a we want blood kind of chant. And it's just Clancy, Clancy. And as soon as I get up, Tim Klein, who is a parajumper to this day, he's built like a brick house. He goes, I'm going to kill you. Just like an inch away from my face. And I was super confident until he said that. And so anyways, we swim our 550. We go to start our rescues. And of course, I have Tim Klein, and he just starts drowning me. And when you get drowned, like, there's kind of this rule, like, there's what you're supposed to do. And then if all else fails, like, hit him. Like, you're going to drown. So I start hitting him in the side, and the last punch I throw, I was like, that was really slow, and I passed out. I wake up on oxygen. Matt Leiden was holding me down, and I was like, nope, not quitting. And I try and stand up, and I like rip the mask off, and I jump back in the pool, even though nobody else is in the pool, because I had to complete it, right? You can't not complete it. And I pass out as soon as I hit the water again. So after they wake me up a second time, they're like, don't move, idiot. They let me complete my rescues. I still entered the water again, did it again. The next day, wake up, they tie a dead fish around your neck. You have to swim around the pier. You have to eat a bunch of gross stuff that makes you barf. All of this had a reason to it too, and they explain it to you, but none of y'all wanna hear that. But anyways, this, like, grueling beat the tar out of 16-year-old to become a lifeguard and work for free really made me come out of my shell. And it made me this, like, confident, egotistical person that is talking in front of you today. And that's how I snuck out of my shell. It took me 22 weeks of getting the tar beat out of me, but it was worth it because that's why I'm in front of you talking today and just talking about the ARCB LSC and some of the best friends I ever made. I got a tattoo right there about it, says 2013. Love those guys.
Marcus Dunbar. He was born in Syracuse, New York. He grew up in the Air Force family. He moved around a lot and eventually landed in Anchorage. He's lived in Kodiak since 1997. He's raised three children here with his lovely wife, Kathleen. He's recently retired from teaching and from coaching cross country and track. Ladies and gentlemen, Marcus.
All right, so a couple of nights ago, I mentioned to my wife, they're having galley tables Friday night. We should go. And okay, sounds good. She goes, oh, I thought they just had one. Okay, so the next night, last night, she goes, yeah, it is tomorrow night. And it's sneaking out. They still need speakers. You want to speak? I'm going, no, I'm not speaking. So I'm out on a run today, and I'm running with Matt Nigley's dogs, and I thought, oh, yeah, I remember something about sneaking out. Maybe. I'll tell them if they still need somebody. Okay, so I come in tonight and I say, yeah, if you need anyone, well, They're like, oh, well, maybe. And then I start going back, and people are saying, I heard you're speaking. What? Here I am. Yeah, I guess it all worked out. So anyways, sneaking out. So I want to take you back to 1983. I'm a freshman in college, University of Portland.
Yeah.
And I've lived in pretty much Anchorage most of my life since I was in first grade. And I get down to college, and I'm seeing everything's kind of new. And the first week of on campus there, they've got reporters coming around from the school newspaper. What do you like about the University of Portland, where I'm at? And I'm like, well, I really like the trees. You know, and so here are a couple days later, the newspaper comes out, and here's all these people saying things like, you know, I'm here for the engineering program, it's really good, I'm a nurse, and all these great answers. And here's me, I like the trees. So, they really do have nice trees on the campus. If you ever go to Anchorage, their trees are beauty. So, you gotta understand where I was coming from. But, so I kind of was, people made fun of me for a while. Yeah, you gotta like the trees. Everyone knew. So a few weeks go by, maybe a month or so, and we all eat at the Commons on campus there, and all of a sudden they're having an art display, and they got all this modern art displayed in the Bill courtyard outside the Commons, and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, wow, that's different. I'm thinking, we can do that. So I talked to some of my friends and I say, I got an idea. We're gonna add to the art display. So that night we decide, I say, okay, dress in black. We get all our black tights. We're all on the track team. So we're there for the cross country and track. And I say, we're gonna put an art display, get dressed. First of all, there's campus security. So if the campus security comes up, we're faster than them, run. Yeah. So that's a strategy. We got a good B plan, okay? But our A plan is stay in the shadows. Don't get caught. So first thing we do is after we're all dressed, we sneak around and we get to the track and we grab the old soccer goal. There's four of us. So we get on and we carry it to the middle of the art display. Then we go back and we get a hurdle and some rope. We come back and we tie the hurdle to one end of the art display, or it's about to be an art display, the soccer goal, and we stand it up on its end. Now, if you know a soccer goal, they're tall. They're wide, actually, but when you stand them up, they're tall. And so here this beautiful soccer goal is standing in the middle of this art display, and it's larger than life. And it's the middle of the night, so we sneak back, undetected, and go to bed. Next morning, we head to breakfast, and there it is, larger than life in sunlight. And we're like so proud. And we go in and we get breakfast, and we're telling all these girls that were friends of ours that we did that. No, you didn't. No, really? And they didn't believe us. So we said, oh, well, whatever. But we did do it, and. A couple days later, when the newspaper comes out, we make the front page. Students have their own art display on the campus, and so before they took it down, we had proof that we had done that, and even though they still might not believe us, but somewhere in the crawl space underneath my house is a box with a copy of that. Deacon, they called it, the campus newspaper, that shows a picture of that front page with our nice art display, our contribution, and it was harmless, but so I guess my motto is, if you have an idea of sneaking out with good intentions, go for it.
Our next storyteller, Barbara, first landed on the shores of the Emerald Isle 12 years ago in response to a Craigslist ad, and she just keeps coming back. Born in Quebec,
She immigrated to the States when she was 3 years old and 3 feet tall, according to her first passport. She considers herself to be home free and has had several passports since then. She prefers volunteering in lieu of paid employment and loves sharing a tale or two from the road. Please welcome Barbara.
I love this. This is what community is about, and I feel very lucky. I actually took part in the very first one that happened 6 years ago, so it's pretty awesome to be back here in a different venue. So, sneaking out, my first response when you get just a couple words is to go with your gut and go with that first story that you remember. And for me, one of the things about sneaking out is about pushing boundaries. It's about breaking rules. It's about getting your heart racing a little bit. So as I look out over this crowd, it does look like the majority of you probably have had a driver's license for a while. Is that right? And to me, this was my golden ticket to adulthood. It's the first one we get to do, right? You can't vote. You're not supposed to drink. But you can drive a car, right? So, but you know, I was always impatient to do things. And I grew up on the East Coast, and there were a lot of roads then. Not like on an island where you're limited, okay? But I lived 2.5 miles from the entrance to I-95. And that highway stretches all the way from New England down to Florida. And being the oldest of 4 children, your parents try out the rules with you first. Am I right? And when you're the oldest, you're supposed to be the good one. You're supposed to be the one that sets an example for the rest of them. So my example that I was supposed to set is that I had to earn the money for my first car. That was the first thing. And the second hurdle was I had to make enough money to pay for the insurance to add to my folks' policy. That was a little bit of a nut to crack, but not too bad. I bought my first car, a 65 Plymouth Valiant. That's how old I am, okay? Teal green, 4-door automatic. Now, the other deal was that my dad said, "You're not going out on the road until you know how to fix a flat. Because I don't want you on the side of the road not knowing what to do." Now, I'd fallen in love with motorized vehicles from the time I was 12 years old. Because my summers were spent in Maine. And I started out with an outboard motor on a skiff, mini bikes, eventually a dirt bike. But now I was ready for the real thing. But I was a little impatient. Now, I'm sure all of you have friends that managed to do something first before you did. Am I right? So, one of my best friends, Lori, she had her license before I did. And that kind of bugged me. You know, the other thing about Lori is she had a way cooler car than I did. She had a 67 Chevy Camaro. Hunter green with a white stripe down the side. Because you know what? She was the youngest. She didn't have to buy that damn car. She got it from her sister. So here I am. I got my learner's permit, going out with my dad in parking lots. How boring is that? On those little back roads. I-95 was right there. So, you know, one day I was griping to my friend Lori about, God, this was taking a while. I knew I could make it. Like, till my 16th birthday, I could do it. And I'd get that license, no problem. So I was griping to her. She was that little bit older than I was. And she said, "You know what? We could sneak out." I said, "What? What are you talking about?" She goes, "You want to drive my car?" Oh, hell yeah. So, of course, this is back in the day before you could text your friends and set up a rendezvous. So you had to talk about it before. And you better not do it at home on the landline, because your parents are going to hear you. Or your dad is going to stand there and do this. That's what mine used to do. So anyway, Lori and I, at school that day, she goes, come on, let's do it tonight. I'm like, for real? She's like, yeah, yeah, we'll do it. I'm gonna take you out on I-95. Okay, we're gonna do I-95. I thought I was ready. So here's the thing, I lived on the I, my bed was on the second floor. But quite handily, outside was a roof. So all I had to do was open that window. I was a few pounds lighter then, a little more agile. So I opened that window, we agreed. We were gonna meet a block from my house at 11 p.m. My parents were long asleep. I crawled out that roof, shimmy down that pipe, and I was down that road. We were on I-95 in no time. Yeah! And you know what? There is nothing like the open road. I still love it. And I still love my license. And here's the best part. My parents never found out.
So we actually have a little bit of a treat tonight. We started with a water brother. The second water brother had volunteered earlier to tell his version of the story. He may be backing out right now.
I can assure you I'm the quicker bottom brother. Because I've never, ever been three blocks back in Mexico. By a tranny. Wait, I don't think you're supposed to use that word. By a guy that I consider a 5 out of 10. But I remember that day, because it was really scary. At about 4 o'clock in the morning, the sun had started getting a little brighter. I go by this place that was called Tom's Tacos. This is no joke, they had a cow head, and they're cutting meat off the cow head and putting it on. It's the best tacos in the world, these days. It was awesome, we'd eat there. And so we're looking at Tom's Tacos for Keller. We go there, and finally my sisters bail out, and everyone's bailed out, and can't find Keller. I'm like, you know what? I know where Keller is. He's down at that hotel with those girls from Nebraska. So I go down there, and they're in the lobby. Because now it's 5:30 in the morning. And the family's there, and they're like, yeah, we saw him, whatever, he's gone. You know, I'm like, okay. So I go up, and there's this guy, and it's like kind of mayday about now. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, where's he at? What's he doing? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm really worried about him. So we roll in there. I say we. Well, maybe it was I, and I go back, and we get by the Blue Parrot, there's this Federale guy, and this is like before tourism like really like hit, so for some reason they were putting like, there were army guys, and there were like these Federale guys that had like these tan costumes on, and so my quick 2 years of Spanish kick in from high school, and I'm like, hola, señor, this is a por favor, I'm like, gosh. This isn't going well. Damn it. Like, I'm looking for her. And he can speak full English. He's like, okay. And looking for her, I was like, you can kind of speak full English. He can speak good enough English. So I realized the whole time we were around, someone spoke Spanish just well enough that we could go anywhere we wanted to. And it happened to work. And now it was by myself, and it didn't really work. And I'm like, I got this guy, and he's my brother. And like, I'm going to run down here, but if you see a guy that looks like me, like, you go ahead and stop him, you know? And it's like, I've got things. So I like run off and like come back. Get back, and I start coming up, and I'm like, oh man, me and Kelly are full heads of hair at this point. There's some guy that has a bunch of hair, and he's wearing this shirt, but he looks all dirty and like nasty. I'm like, oh man, now he's like in a fight with someone, like, this is really bad. This is really bad. And the other side of Kelly, tell is he was scared. And so he's like, I am 2 blocks away, I am almost home, and then all of a sudden, this guy comes out and grabs him, and it's like, you can't go anywhere. He's like, like, I'm right there. I know I'm right there. I'm right there. And so I come down the road, and I'm like, oh, who's that guy? He's all played. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Keller. That guy's holding a mirror. That's Keller. So I go there. I'm like, ah, thank you, thank you. And, like, we go in, and we get through, and the next morning we wake up. My mom's really very laid back. My dad's very not. And so he's pissed that his screen's broke. So after that entire night of everything that happened, someone gets dad. Keller just, he's mad about a screen. And then we like get in a bus and everyone's throwing up and it was terrible. And then I got another side story. We have one Kodiak story. that I might, that I'm going to tell. So, we used to sneak out in Kodiak, and sneaking out of Kodiak is very different than sneaking out anywhere else in the world. One, you got Flats people, and you got Wenatchee people. And you got maybe people that bottom line at Cliff Point that will never come to a social event ever, because it's just frankly too far away. Flats people don't hang out with Wenatchee people, Wenatchee people don't hang out with Flats people, we all know the dynamic. Now, when it comes to sneaking out, back in, you know, 1999, you don't have a cell phone. Like, you come up with your plan at 3:30 at school, and or right after that, if you call so-and-so's house at 7 o'clock, that sets off a red flag. You don't call them at 7 o'clock. You come up with a plan, you meet at this light pole this time, buy Mill Lake coffee, we'll meet here at 12 o'clock at night. And that might entail getting on your BMX bike and riding across. Now they got scooters, but I don't know how they get around. No one has phones, no one has anything. Like, you will be here at this time, so your plan and engaging, it took honesty, and it took trust. And so that built friendships. So, in one of these times, we would visit a I might leave this part out. There was one fisherman family whose dad was always out of town and he had a car and a house to himself, but we had to get to him because he didn't have a lot of motivation. So, he may or may not have lived across from Kima. We would go there. He had a truck and the only cell phone. So, on that night, we would go there and we'd visit the recycle center and we'd maybe harass around people with a whole lot of magazines. And after that, we're deciding we're going home. We're going home, we start going over and we get by the high school. And we're going, there's two cop cars and they're parked there. And they have the old Explorers, the Ford Explorers. Everyone knows the cop car, Ford Explorer. You look at them right around here. And we're going, and we're like, oh man, they're sitting there talking to each other. We should go screw with them. And so it's me, Keller, brother. Jack would throw him Ryan Dixon. I'm like, all right, we're just going to go by the corner, we're going to yell, and then we're going to just run in a straight line. We're going to go over by where the Kodiak High School sign is. Across the road, you run in a straight line. They won't go more than 100 yards from their car. No big deal. Just keep going. Meet at Ford Kodiak. I got cool. So me and Jack get out of the car. We're running. We're just going to yell. And no, he doesn't yell. He whacks the side of the car. And you hear this, and you hear the sound of two metal bumpers back in the day, for those of you who stick out about this far. Well, they can catch. So these two guys catch and rip their bumpers. So then you run. And anyone that's ever put a car in park before knows the sound of when you put it in park too fast. It goes, and so I'm like running across the street, and then you see headlights, and it's like, oh my God, is this guy gonna run into us? Yeah, he's gonna run into us. Like, so we go over, and all of a sudden there's this flashlight coming, we get to the next road. We're going down towards Mission, and Jack takes off and he goes to the left. And I keep going straight. I'm like, yeah, that guy's gonna follow him. That guy's gonna, nope, he's following me. The flashlight's still going. I'm like, oh God, no. And so all of a sudden, I thought he threw the flashlight at me, and he tumbles. And I'm like, oh God. And so I whip around and I'm going to an unnamed person's house. And like, hi, and I'm just waiting in there. And then I finally sneak down to this other house called Ryan Keller. Like, they come and pick me up. And they're like, yeah, man, this guy who, I'll use his initials, Eric Olson was the city guy. And he was pissed! He was pissed! And he pulls them over and he is like, so that was the easy ass story.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller.